I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Chris Conrad, is an American author, activist, curator, publisher, and court-recognized expert in cannabis cultivation and use. He has played a key role in the shaping of the modern industry and medical cannabis reform movement as an author of such seminal books as Hemp Lifeline to the Future, 1991, and Hemp for Health, 1997, as well as through the activist work as the co-founder and first president of the Hemp Industrial Association, founder of Business Alliances in Commerce and Hemp, and the Signature Gathering Coordination for the Proposition 215 volunteer effort, which made California the first U.S. state to legalize the medical use of cannabis. The December 1999 issue of High Times ranked Conrad number 10 on its list of top 25 living legends in the battle for legal cannabis. In addition to the two books identified, he also authored Cannabis Yield and Dosage in 2004 and Nostradamus and the Attack of New York. He co-authored two books with collaborators Virginia Riesner and his wife Mickey Norris, Shattering Lives, Portraits from America's Drug War, and Human Rights and the U.S. Drug War. Since 2007, Chris has taught at Oaksterdam University's Oakland, California campus, where he teaches the history of and politics of cannabis. He also established a cannabis museum in Amsterdam. He received the Outstanding Citizens Activism Award, the Oaksterdam University Lifetime Achievement Award, and the Drug Policy Alliance Robert C. Randall Award for achievement in the field of citizen action, and jointly with his wife, the Seattle Hempster Outstanding Cannabis Activist Award. He has a major listing in Wikipedia for his work with marijuana. More information is available at www.chrisconrad.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Chris, and I look forward to hearing about medical marijuana. Now, first, as one of the experts in the field who teaches doctors and attorneys about marijuana and who serves as an expert witness in court, what got you started investigating this field in the first place?
Well, thank you for asking, Carl. And thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate this opportunity. What got me started was actually I was in the environmental movement, and particularly the anti-nuclear movement. And one of the things that we spoke about that time was finding alternatives. And so I was interested in biofuels, plant matter used as energy. And so in the course of that, I found out about a cannabis hemp plant as being the most prolific and one of the easier to process plants in that regard. And so, it seemed like a great idea to have America, you know, cultivating a lot of this. And then I found out about the cannabis part of it, meaning marijuana meant that it wasn't legal for farms to grow hemp. I thought that would be an easy fix, Carl, because hemp doesn't have the psychoactive effect of marijuana. And so, and plus the DEA judge had just ruled that cannabis has medical value and that the DEA was wrong to put it in there. And so in the course of this, I wound up working my way through industrial hemp into medical marijuana and into the social use of cannabis. So I was writing pamphlets. I went to Holland, designed a couple of museums, and grew marijuana legally there. And so as a result of that, when I came back to the United States, I had legal experience growing marijuana, and I wrote my first book, Hemp Lifeline to the Future, at that point. And so that was what was able to leverage me in as a marijuana expert witness in the courts.
Great. Then, Chris, in your book, Hemp for Health, you characterize medical marijuana as a panacea and say that it's used to relieve a variety of symptoms such as chronic pain, muscle spasms, and nausea. What does that mean in terms of treating cancer symptoms and cancer itself?
the idea of a panacea, a lot of people treat that as being a cure-all, but technically what the word means is that it has a very broad effect. And because cannabis treats specific problems, like, say, chronic pain, muscle spasms, nausea, things that are specific, but their symptoms are actually common to a lot of different diseases. Like chronic pain is involved in a lot of things. Muscle spasms, of course, is in all your different motion problems and so forth, because it also treats ataxia, which is the opposite of a spasm, where it's a spasm, you can't control the movement. With ataxia, you can't move. And so things like multiple sclerosis and any of your seizure disorders, that's going to affect that. Chronic pain is, of course, in almost all different things. Nausea is common in many different things, from the flu to cancer chemotherapy and so forth. And so that's the sense. I mean, it's a panacea. You can use it as long as the symptom exists. You can use cannabis to treat it despite the actual condition. So in terms of cancer, what that usually means is that people use it to control the nausea and so forth related to the treatments like radiation or chemotherapy. They use it for the chronic pain of the condition itself, and also to elevate their mood. And let me give you an example of somebody, a person I knew who had AIDS. Mm-hmm. He said that what happened to him when he started using cannabis, he went from feeling like he was dying from AIDS to feeling like he was living with AIDS. And so just that feeling that he could do it was a huge impact. And so he was able to pull himself out of this spiral downward and until other treatments came along and was able to maintain his condition. Now, when it comes to cancer, there's a whole other aspect, though, because, you know, yeah, it's good for treating the side effects of chemo and radiation therapy. But also the fact is that THC particularly has the ability to kill tumors. And they've shown that in vitro and also in vivo. And when you see the in vivo stuff, it's pretty impressive. There's this doctor, Robert Melamed in Colorado, for example. He had a gentleman who had a brain cancer that had a tumor that was pressing against his skull. And so they had to slice off a piece of this guy's skull in order to reduce the pressure. The tumor came right through the top of his head. And they started taking this salve made from cannabis and smearing it over it. And it shrunk it back down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the guy was actually recovered from the cancer. Now, the thing is that, as you know, with cancer, they don't consider it cured unless you wait for like 5 years without a recurrence. And so this is one of the things where a lot of these people who've done this, or there's another thing that they call RSO, Rick Simpson oil, Phoenix tears, full extract cannabis oil. Those all mean the same thing. Basically, this is a paste made from the medical compounds in cannabis, and people eat this material significant amounts, like a gram a day, which for somebody to get high, it takes like a tenth or less of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is where the controversy is right now. A lot of people who had supposedly incurable cancers have been using this process of using very high doses of THC in this paste form, and they have had remarkable success. But the medical community then hasn't accepted it because they're not the clinical studies, and they don't have the long-term tracking that makes a doctor comfortable with saying that it's a cure. Plus, on the other hand, I would say that, you know, the medical community is very tied into the drug industry,
right,
and surgeries and stuff like that. So they don't want to necessarily admit that there's another alternative. And personally, I think that the combination of treatments is the best thing for something like cancer.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the paste something that you eat?
Exactly, yeah. And it's like a very greasy, oily. Some people can put it right in their mouth and, you know, just eat it that way. But most of the people I know, you take it and you put it through a capsule. And the other thing is, it's such a strong dose, this full extract cannabis oil, that when you do it, you have to work your way up. So people start off with like a tenth of a gram or less a day for a week or two. And then when they don't feel overwhelmed, when they're comfortable with that amount, then they increase it. And they ultimately, I've known people to go up to a gram a day and up to even 3 grams a day for this regimen. But an average person, if you or I were just to take a gram of that or 3 grams of it, for heaven's sake, we'd be on our back for a week with our heads spinning and probably wishing we had not done so.
Mm-hmm. I take a hemp, which is a different part of the plant, as I understand it. But it's the most complete plant-based. It's higher in protein than any of the other plants.
Right. Yeah. You're talking about the hemp seed protein or the hemp seed oil, as opposed to what I was talking about is the extract from the flowers. Mm-hmm. And so, what you're talking about That's why in my book, Hemp for Health, I talked about the holistic aspect of it, because I said it's not just a matter of creating our diseases. We need to have healthy people living on a healthy planet. That's going to take care of a lot of these diseases by itself. Mm-hmm. And so exactly what you're talking about is one of the things I discuss in that book, how the use of the hemp seed has 8 essential proteins, 3 essential fatty acids. It has 1 EFA that's found basically in mother's milk and in 2 other plant forms, but it's produced by mothers in order to help their children survive when they're nursing. So the impact of that stuff is profound. I'm really glad to hear you're taking it, because I use it as well, mm-hmm. Not as much as I should, but I found a lot of good benefits from it, mm-hmm. digestive especially. I don't have any digestive problems at all, mm-hmm. and I think to some extent it's because of that. Now, another thing about that is that they're making a protein powder out of the shells. The thing you have to remember is that if you just take a hemp seed and chew it up, that shell is going to be very unpleasant to eat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's why people use the oil or the what they call the nut, the kernel inside of it, a hemp nut or a hemp kernel. And those are really great on salads and things like that. So you can get it different ways. But when people use the herd, which is basically the shell of the seed, they use that basically for roughage. And that's usually taken in a capsule form. It's a combination of protein and roughage.
Mm-hmm. I think what I take, I take the hemp as it is, but then I also take a hemp powder that is part hemp. And the reason they use it is because it is so high in protein. And if you're on a vegan diet, that's one of the things that's pretty hard to get, is enough protein.
Right.
The other thing I'm wondering...
And the interesting thing with that is that they're called the essential proteins because your body doesn't produce the hemp proteins, but it will use the hemp proteins to create the other proteins that your body needs. So it gives you the essential ones, but they're primarily the building blocks for the more complex proteins that people need in their diet.
Mm-hmm. I've also interviewed 2 or 3 people that on the anti-inflammation diet and anti-inflammation, and they think that if you avoid inflammation, you can prevent disease, and you can also treat disease by using an anti-inflammatory diet. I would wonder if maybe hemp seeds are not anti-inflammatory, since they are plant-based, and since they do, one of the things that the anti-inflammatory does is to work with pain.
I'm not very knowledgeable about that particular area.
Yeah.
I do know that the smoking cannabis, that the cannabinoids in the plant are anti-inflammatory. And I've known a lot of people who use it, what they call the prophylactic effect. I do know people who use it for what they call the prophylactic effect, meaning that it stops conditions from occurring. And so a good example of that is people who have glaucoma, because it reduces eye pressure, but also people who have inflammation issues like what you're talking about, they smoke it in order to keep that down. Now, the hemp seed is also pH neutral. So people who are interested in having a non-acid diet find hemp seed protein is very valuable.
Oh, so it has a lot of value.
Yeah, and plus the minerals. That all depends on where it's grown. And one of the things about that is, of course, like any food product, you want to make sure that it's grown in an organic, clean environment, doesn't have contaminants in it. Mm-hmm. But anything that makes it onto the market at this point is pretty carefully checked out. 30 years ago, when we were first getting hemp seed available to people, it was, I guess that's 25 years ago, when we were first making it available to people, they weren't as careful about that. But, you know, they clean it up really good nowadays. It's a very healthy food source.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to say anything more about the CBD that you mentioned?
Yeah, I would love to. Cannabinoids, there's about 60 different cannabinoids, and more than 100 if you count the variations of them, the different cannabinoids themselves. But the main thing, though, is that people have been watching are two primarily. THC, which is the psychotropic version, has a lot of medical value, the most studied for medical purposes of the compounds. But it's also been used for THC is used also for getting high. And so some people don't want to use THC because they don't like that effect. But when it comes to CBD, cannabidiol, depending on what pronunciation you want to use, this does not have the psychoactive or psychotropic effect. And so people who use that get a lot of the same benefits from medical purposes, but they don't have the effect of being high. And in fact, if you have CBD mixed in with your THC, it makes the high less intense. So for people who have a stressful relationship with cannabis, it could be this all THC with no CBD in it. And if you have a variety like industrial hemp that doesn't have much THC in it, then those people are going to get more CBD. And that sounds like where you're going with it. But one of the things I need to mention about CBD is that this is a compound that was discussed by Dr. Sanjay Gupta on the CNN program, where he apologized for being anti-marijuana for so long and said that the government had lied to him. And now he knew the truth. He knows that marijuana is good medicine and it should be legalized. The way that he got into it was that because people using CBD to treat seizure disorders in very young children and having an incredible success, going from 100 seizures a day to maybe one or two a week, incredible progress that these people made with it. And the reason they were giving this to children is because it doesn't have the psychotropic effect. Mm-hmm. And so that was what made him feel like, well, he'd need to look at it again, was when he saw these children responding. And believe me, I've seen some of those kids myself. I've been at events where these little guys, they're growing up, of course, they're not as little as they were when we first saw them, but they really, they're just great little kids, and mm-hmm. when you see the video of how they were just totally locked into seizures, paralyzed essentially by seizures at different parts of their life, and know that the federal government has still not made it safe for these families to get access to it, it's kind of chilling why the government would be in between a parent and the medicine that will save a child's life.
Then Chris,
but one thing I should mention, when I wrote my book Hemp for Health in 1997 about this, though, and I mentioned CBD and the nutrition of hemp seed as being part of a healthy regimen, I got a lot of flack for hemp because they thought I was mixing it in with drugs, and they were saying, well, hemp's not a drug. Mm-hmm. And I got attacked by the people who were on the medical marijuana side of the issue, because they said, if you start talking about hemp and CBD, people are not going to use marijuana, and it's going to slow down the legalization of THC marijuana for medical use. And so, it's funny to me that now, 20 years later, this is like the greatest thing since apple pie. But when 20 years ago, when I was writing about it, I was roundly attacked for saying the same thing that everybody who says today is seen as being a visionary for discovering. Mm-hmm. Ironic, you can be a little bit ahead of your time.
Right.
That's still possible.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Right.
I imagine so. Yeah, you've had quite a remarkable career yourself.
Then, Chris, can you tell us about the new concept of endocannabinoid systems in the human body?
The endocannabinoid system is absolutely amazing. When I was running Hemp for Health back in the early, in the mid-90s, as I said, they had just discovered that there was a molecule that connects the THC weren't sure else, but at least the THC was connected to the brain and to the nerve system through this substance called anandamide. And so what's funny to me is in my book, I do this chart and I said, okay, well, here's what people tell me marijuana helps them. And I do this different parts of the body that marijuana seems to help. Mm-hmm. And then bit by bit, they put together this idea of that there's two different receptors in the body, the CB, which means cannabinoid, CB1 and CB2. And then it's only in the past 5 or 7 years that they came to the conclusion that when you add all these cannabinoids up, it creates actually a modulatory system within the human body. So it's kind of like as if we didn't know we had a nervous system, or we didn't know we had a digestive system or circulatory system or muscles. I mean, it's a fundamental system in the human body that modulates all these other systems. And that's why the effects are so profound. These receptors are spread all over the body. It's kind of like your skin as being an organ, It covers the whole thing. Well, the cannabinoids are throughout the whole body, too. But they're just a natural part of being a human. Actually, all the mammals seem to have this system, but humans in particular. And so it was a few years ago, they started calling it the endocannabinoid system. Endo meaning within, cannabinoid, of course. And then that on the plant, the cannabinoids on the plant are called phytocannabinoids, which means plant cannabinoids. And so what they've discovered, people may have a lack of part of their endocannabinoid system may not be stimulated properly, or it may be overstimulated. And then what you do is when you use the cannabis, either you provide the missing cannabinoids or you flood the system, and it basically is like a computer reset button so that it brings people back to where they're supposed to be once you flood their system with the cannabinoids. And of course, now one of the other things that they're finding is that you can use microdoses of cannabinoids that then triggers responses in the body to where the body then continues to make its own, or it stimulates the endocannabinoid system. Mm-hmm. And so you know, we've known for thousands of years that people smoke marijuana and they get high, and that sick people use marijuana. I mean, we've got 5,000-year-old medical books that talk about using marijuana. But it's only in the past 15 years or so that they put together that there's actually a body system within each one of us that relates to this. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes back to that thing that we mentioned about mother's milk with the hemp seed, that the oil from the hemp seed has medical compounds that are only found in a few plants and mother's milk. Now, when it comes to endocannabinoids, it turns out that women who are lactating produce additional endocannabinoids to give to the infant that's suckling. And so this is something where if that isn't happening correctly, then that's possibly a point where we would interact with phytocannabinoids. And so the whole point of this thing is that it will be possible, we think in the near future, the research is working on this, that you'll be able to get a profile of what the cannabinoids are and what the ratios of the different cannabinoids to each other are in the plant. And then you can look at a human's cannabinoid profile as well, the endocannabinoid profile, and kind of like design which kind of cannabis any given person needs in order to best get the best health effects from the cannabis. And a lot of us don't think of cannabis as being necessarily a medicine as much as a wellness substance, meaning mm-hmm. that you need the nutrition to keep your body healthy. You use the cannabinoids to keep your system running properly and keep it balanced out right. You know, you don't wait till you're sick and then use marijuana and then say, oh, well, now it's treating a symptom. Because mm-hmm. treating symptoms and treating diseases are different.
Chris, you've mentioned that there's research in Israel and that this has been around for a long time and that people have used it. Why is it moving so slowly in terms of getting it legalized so that people can use it? And usually I find that slowness is somehow related to money.
Very observant, Carl.
Is this the same?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm sure you've talked about this a lot of times in your program yourself. That at the beginning of the 20th century, the medical industry was taken over by the pharmaceutical industry. And they started with national and international laws about medicines. And arbitrarily, cannabis was actually one of the most important medicines in the 19th century. It had more than 100 medicines that used cannabis in it. It was written about extensively in scientific journals and so forth. And it was really seen as potentially a miracle drug. But then the problem from the pharmaceutical drug industry's point of view is that it was a plant that anybody could grow, and it had a lot of different compounds. It could help a lot of different conditions, whereas they were shifting to something else, which was clinically tested molecules that have a specific effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so because cannabis is more complex and intuitive than that, they basically wanted to get rid of it and replace it with things that they could control by manufacturing them or mm-hmm. by controlling the sources. Like, for example, the opiates from the natural plant, they were taking control of because they wouldn't allow people to grow the opium here in the United States. So you had to go internationally to get the opium. And, of course, that gives them the ability to control things. So in many ways, it ties back to that. And as you know, since the beginning of the 20th century, the pharmaceutical drug industry's effect on influence on government has not diminished at all.
Right.
Greater than ever, if not. But the other thing about cannabis, though, is because once they prohibited it, they used it specifically to target groups in society, African Americans in particular, people who like jazz music, liberals, artists, things like that, that they were able to target certain groups in society with these laws. And so law enforcement has a huge invested interest in it as a way of going after certain minority groups in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And even moreover, the federal government puts out like $40 billion, that was a B, billion
mm-hmm.
Dollars a year that it spends on things related to suppressing cannabis. And so the law enforcement industrial complex and the prison industries, they both stand to lose a lot of money once cannabis is legal. And especially mm-hmm. when you look at the prison industries, within that there is the prison industrial complex that has prison labor. And one of the things that our research has shown is that people who go to prison for a marijuana charge, mm-hmm. they often have life skills, job skills, they're not troublemakers. They're perfect candidates to work for 36 cents an hour in a prison factory, and mm-hmm. then some corporation makes the money on it.
Oh.
So everything that we have here shows that this is for two different things, is to make sure that the pharmaceutical drug industry controls the medical money that comes in, and law enforcement gets a big chunk of the tax money. Mm-hmm. And then you throw into that property forfeiture, the fact that the government can steal your property by saying that you were involved with marijuana without even proving it or getting a conviction. And you've got what I call kleptocracy, government by theft. The government can, if you have a successful marijuana smoker, the government can steal their property.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is unfortunately the reality of where we are now and why it's so important that we get things like this bill that was just introduced into Congress the other day. I think it's a House of Representatives, H.R. 975, that's been introduced into Congress to resolve that problem. And it's going to be tricky, though, because, like I said, the money, you're exactly right. It's money that we're lined up against, mm-hmm. money and power. And mm-hmm. that's never an easy combination to break.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know. We've been trying for years to do something about Washington. And look what happened to poor Bernie. Because he's
yeah, right.
He's
and
the one.
You know, Bernie was in favor of descheduling marijuana, which would actually be the best thing because your naturopathic medicines and herbal remedies, they're not regulated by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
but then marijuana, all of a sudden, they stick it in there and they make it not only regulated but banned by
mm-hmm.
the government.
Mm-hmm.
So what he was talking about is the best thing to do: put it back in the hands. And another reason I think that's a good approach, what Bernie suggested about descheduling, is that we've got this. The marijuana is getting stronger and stronger and stronger all the time. And one of the things I say is that, you know, marijuana has been used by people, cannabis has been used by people for thousands of years, but it hasn't been used in super concentrated forms, used, smoked in the form of dabs for
mm-hmm.
all that long.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing has happened in the past 5 or 10 years. The potency of marijuana has doubled in the past 10 years. So what you wind up with is a situation where I think that a lot of people would rather use lower dosages, but because of its illegality, you want to get the most for your money that you can, so people go for the stronger doses. And if we can just, like I said, take Bernie's idea, get it out of the drug schedules, just treat it like a plant medicine, then people would go back to, I think, the more the kind of quantities and dosages that people have used throughout history that have been, we know are safe, because no one has died from a marijuana overdose in the history of the world, as
mm-hmm.
far as anyone knows.
Mm-hmm. Then, Chris, what do you see coming up in the future as far as legalization and as far as cost and dosing and whatever?
Well, my new book is called The Newbie's Guide to Cannabis in the Industry, and that's what we try to do is to take a look at where things are going. I think that the internationally that marijuana, the United States cannot continue to suppress medical marijuana around the world. Spain and Israel and other countries have the cat's out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going
mm-hmm.
to just do what the United States says from there on, especially now with this administration that is not even encouraged cooperation with European countries. They're going to definitely start charting a different course, which I think is one of the good things about, mm-hmm. one of the few good things I see about what's going on in our government right now, is that it's going to give Europe more freedom to do its own thing instead of being America's lapdog.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side here, within, we've got, I think it's 28 states that have marijuana laws, medical marijuana laws, and we've got 8 states that have non-medical marijuana laws passed and in place. And so in terms of the percentage of the country that's got access to medical marijuana, it's already gone up greatly. Trump, when he was running for president, he made a big deal about how he knows people who use medical marijuana, and he thinks the government should, and his word was, do medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Does do mean deschedule? Does do mean reschedule? We don't know what the word do means,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he
mm-hmm.
said we're going to do medical marijuana. And he said that the state should have the right to decide on their own. But now when you look at who he's appointed as attorney general, who has just approved Jeff Sessions, you've got
mm-hmm.
somebody who's been very anti-marijuana, who's been very pro-property forfeiture, who's been very pro-drug war.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy he put in charge of the prosecutions here, the attorney general's office. So we're going to be navigating a very cautious path for the next few years. My guess is that the fact that there's so much money to be made from medical marijuana now is going to be one of the deciding factors, and that this administration is not going to want to take on the people who are interested in investing in it. They're not interested in having a bunch of patients protesting in front of the White House about
mm-hmm.
losing it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be cautious, but they're kind of schizophrenic in the sense that part of the administration is saying that we need more freedom, part of the administration is saying they want to crack down,
mm-hmm.
and so how it's going to play out, we don't exactly know. I do know that industrial hemp is definitely on its way back here in the United States. We've got 16 states that have industrial hemp laws that allow it. We've got Congress have passed in the farm bill the right for people to grow it. What's going on right now, the DEA is blocking shipments, so the state can grow hemp, and it's legal to ship hemp around, but the DEA is claiming that if you can't grow, ship around hemp once you grow it in the United States, which is insane. Mm-hmm. And so right now that there's been a case filed by the Hemp Industries Association that's challenged them on that regard. So we're going to have some fights, but I think the progress is inevitable. It's not guaranteed to be smooth, but it's going to happen.
Great. Good. Then, Chris, will you tell us about your books, services, and any products you have and how the listeners can reach you?
Yeah, I would love to, Carl. Actually, I have like quite a few books. There are three that I would talk about the cannabis issue with the most. Hemp Lifeline to the Future is pretty old. It was the groundbreaking book that explained about hemp back in the early 90s. Hemp for Health is still the most general, holistic book on medical marijuana that's been written. I haven't seen anybody else who covered it in the kind of breadth that I did on that. The Newbie's Guide to Cannabis in the Industry takes a look at the way things are today and introduces people to how they can get into the industry or what they should know before they start using marijuana. I mean, it's not just for the industry side, it's for the consumer side as well. And I have another book that the people can get free. It's called Cannabis Yields and Dosage, where I took the federal government's research on medical marijuana and medical marijuana production, and I composed into a formula which has now been adapted by the state of California as one of our legal protections here. That's free as a download at my website, chrisconrad.com. And so if you want to know more about the consequences of the drug war, my wife and I have two books that are called Shattered Lives, Portraits from America's Drug War, and the other one is called Human Rights in the U.S. Drug War. And they both tell the stories of people whose lives were destroyed by federal drug policy, marijuana policy in particular, and let people know how it actually violates international law, what we're doing here. It's just that no one has held the United States' feet to the fire on that. And so that's, unfortunately, you know, those books are like 20 years old, and there's been almost no reform on the federal law since then, but it really wakes people up about why we need to have that reform there. Mm-hmm. And I also work as an expert witness in the courts. Mm-hmm. You can also contact me at chrisconrad.com that way. And then the last thing I would say is we have a new service to update people about cannabis. They'll get to read about a lot of the things we were talking about today. And that's it, called theleafonline.com, theleafonline.com. And, you know, from there, people can contact me for the email from there. But directly it's chris@chrisconrad.com. And I do a lot of consulting with people who are interested in the business side of it. I help people who have legal problems, you know, and I speak to people who are in policy levels to try to help them get better policies. So I'm interested in hearing from any of your listeners who either needs help or can be of help.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Chris. It's interesting, and I'm learning so much about the whole field that I didn't know before. So I appreciate your taking the time to talk with me.
Well, thank you for this opportunity, and I'm sure your listeners are appreciative, too, because this is an area that this really hasn't been explored as much as you would think. For a medicine that's been around for 10,000 years, we should know everything about it. And like I said, we're just still in the discovery phase because Prohibition knocked it out almost 100 years ago, and we're still coming back.
Yep, great. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
My second guest, Constant Finlay, founder and CEO of Constance Therapeutics, was inspired by her own personal experience with a chronic illness. After nearly dying from the pharmaceuticals prescribed to help alleviate pain and inflammation caused by a rare autoimmune disease, Finlay turned to medical cannabis for relief. She quickly became fascinated with science behind the medical benefits of cannabis. Studies have found that cannabinoids like THC and CBD are more effective when working in tandem with the entire photochemical profile or the female cannabis flower versus working in isolation. Known as the entourage effect, based on her research, Finlay became determined to make standardized whole plant cannabis extracts that incorporate all the naturally occurring cannabinoids, terpenes, and flavonoids in cannabis and are safe for those with compromised immune systems. Constant holds a Master's of Art in Clinical Psychology from the University of San Francisco, where she graduated first in her class, and a Bachelor's of Art in Eastern Studies and Psychology from Lone Mountain College, where she graduated summa cum laude. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Constance, and I look forward to hearing about cannabis and cancer. Now, first, Constance, can you tell us briefly about how you got involved with cannabis?
Yes, I can, Carl, and thank you so much for having me on your show. What happened to me is that I got very, very sick when I was relatively young. I was in my mid-40s. I was a very successful entrepreneur. I'd founded a financial company. I loved the work I did, and I became incredibly ill and was housebound for about 15 years and unable to even go out to dinner, became pretty isolated. I saw my doctors and a few loyal friends. Really great diagnostician, a rheumatologist who diagnosed me appropriately with ankylosing spondylitis, a very severe case. And he promptly put me on the drugs, and he found that none of them worked, so he moved me to the biologic. And those are the drugs that are the kind of cutting-edge anti-cancer and autoimmune drugs. And they're very, very expensive, and they're very, very powerful. And so the last one he gave me caused me to almost die. It took about 6 years before we knew that indeed I would live. And the fact that I had that negative experience with this very potent drug meant that my body wasn't safe to receive other allopathic drugs. Mm-hmm. I was in danger from taking anything. So my doctor said, your biggest risk is dying of a heart attack from the incredible inflammatory process underway in your body. And we can't give you any more drugs. None. Zero. Mm-hmm. So I had a pretty strong prejudice against marijuana or cannabis, as I like to call it, a more scientific term. And what happened is that my friends just kept urging me. It was legal in California. You could go get it at dispensaries. Medical needs were recognized, but I was very skeptical. I didn't want to become an addict, mm-hmm. unquote. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that there is no physical addiction property possible in cannabis, that NIH, our National Institute of Health, has actually said there isn't a pathway of addiction. So it's amazing what you find out our government is saying about this drug. Mm-hmm. So what happened is I went to those dispensaries, and they made me really uncomfortable. And I bought the best I could find, and I found that it gave me a tiny bit of relief if I remembered to smoke it nightly. Mm-hmm. I didn't like smoking it nightly. I didn't like being high. So I had to really get my head around, and it took me about a year and a half total to say, this is a very silly prejudice I have. If this is helping incrementally, it can help more. Mm-hmm. And that's what started me on a path of discovery and finding out what was called then cannabis oil, and basically was just this thing. You didn't really know what it was. You couldn't buy it. And only people kind of made it in backyards as a compassionate gift to those in trouble. And I looked at it and I said, geez, I can't find out if the cannabis is organic because I can't even find out where it's grown. Mm-hmm. I use jet fuel or these toxic things that these people are using in their backyards to strip the cannabis trichomes and make the medicine. And so I said, maybe people have gotten well from cancer, but I don't have cancer. I have autoimmune. And if this helps me, I'm going to be taking it a long time. So I began a very extensive process of professionalizing and creating what is now our patent pending. And we have two patents issued and one pending on the process. And looked into how can I make this a healthy, accessible, reliable thing for the people who are desperately ill.
Mm-hmm. And Constance, how do you choose the right cannabis for specific types of cancer?
It's a really great question, Carl. And the honest answer is that we don't know yet. Mm-hmm. So what I saw was that I could be a compounding pharmacy for cannabis extract mm-hmm. to provide physicians and the patients they referred me. And that what I needed to do was work with the same genetic, the same strains. So I started with a group of them, and we have preserved those strains, and we give them to our farmers to grow. And that means that we begin to understand how these interact in human bodies and even in dogs and cats' bodies, because we've worked with a lot of vet-referred dogs. So the answer is we're in discussion. discovery. And what happened to us when I did this and took it this seriously, which cannabis in modern times has never been taken serious. So we standardized the process. We work with known genetics. We're organic only 100%. I work only with the flower that is tightly trimmed, whereas almost every single other person copying what we do uses the trim. There's scientific reasons to not do that. We don't use hemp. We use only cannabis genetics. Mm-hmm. We were the first in the world to make CBD-rich concentrate, and we very much value, I have been so excited to be part of this burgeoning movement, but THC is very, very necessary. So we've developed a kind of a methodology that is based on all the patients that the doctors have referred to us, the doctors themselves working with us to understand what is going on. And then the science is coming to us and saying something very, very unusual has happened in what you're doing. Let us help you figure out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I take that standardization, known genetics, organic growing, and then I developed a coaching model, which said me and the people the doctors referred to me were very cannabis naive. None of us wanted to be high.
Mm-hmm.
But to really actually deal with cancer, the science suggests that you must take potent amounts of THC.
Mm-hmm.
So I developed a model where I helped hold these people's hands, basically, and teach them how to attenuate to the cannabis, how to use it scientifically and appropriately as it interacts with their body. So it's customized medical cannabis based on our 8 years of working with humans and dogs,
mm-hmm.
and what we have learned from it. And it's
mm-hmm.
an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm. And are you a doctor referral only?
No, we're not. We started out that way, and I was very, very afraid to deal with anyone that didn't come through doctors at
mm-hmm.
that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was not comfortable being in this gray area of legal in California, but not legal everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very careful. After, let's see, it was in 2013 that Dr. Forsyth released his statistics with the people he was following that he had referred to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he let it be publicly known that 96% of stage 4 second occurrence cancer patients, the ones he felt had no possible hope, that 26 out of 28 went into cancer-free state after working with our medicine.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So that kind of opened the floodgates,
mm-hmm.
right? The whole world wanted
mm-hmm.
to come to California, which they can do legally. You can come here and receive it legally. But that's kind of what's made us different from the beginning. It's this attention on treating it scientifically, working with the physicians, and working with really seriously ill people.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing much more wonderful than helping people out of options find something that their doctor and they come back and tell you was really, really helpful,
mm-hmm.
and that their life has either been extended or the quality was greatly increased. We honestly cry around here 2 or 3 times a week from the success stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there certain cancers that cannabis is more effective with than others?
I think that in some ways the answer is the same as what I gave you, is that we are trying to find out. Lots
mm-hmm.
of groups, lots of scientific research is being done. What we've observed is that glioblastoma has become the cancer designation of which the most patients are sent to us by far.
Mm-hmm.
We have, our inquiries have grown in that direction to the point now that maybe a third to half of our inquiries are from people who have brain cancer or a family member does. There's a lot of reasons coming out that shows why. There's just a big study by GW Pharmacy being released showing efficacy. We believe our whole plant extracts are wildly more effective than the isolate approach that GW Pharmacy makes, but we won't know until we can actually do human
mm-hmm.
clinical research.
Mm-hmm.
But the hard science, the in vivo and the in vitro science, is very clear that THC works miracles because it can cross the blood-brain barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So what's lacking is taking this hard research, these observed multiple ends of one, which are a valid scientific measurement. When you're dealing with an individual, it doesn't have to be just anecdotal if you are dealing with it scientifically, following, recording, gathering your data. So that's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
We have at this time probably about 80 glioblastoma patients that have requested to work with us. And I think that just keeps growing because people see, how efficacious this is.
Mm-hmm.
There's other fast-acting cancers that we've seen great results with, and we have seen good results with prostate, triple-negative, and regular breast cancers. We've seen gastrointestinal, stomach, esophageal. We're having a spate of people getting back to us and saying that they had stage 4 esophageal and now they are cancer-free.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them and many of their doctors credit this. We need to actually follow it as completely as possible to understand. Mm-hmm. Is this partially an interaction with allopathic treatment?
Mm-hmm.
Does it work better on its own? We don't know those answers.
Mm-hmm.
We see indications that fast-acting cancers are suppressed very, very fast in some instances using cannabis oil alone.
Mm-hmm.
But long-term studies need to be done.
Now, Dr. Forsyth was using it on a variety of diagnoses, right?
That's correct. It was whoever was hopeless, basically.
Right, right. He's done some fantastic work. He wrote a chapter in one of my books, and he's a great physician and one that I refer a lot of people to because I have a lot of confidence in him.
He's great. He's very brave, and he thinks out of the box, which is what I credit myself with doing.
Right.
He dedicated his last book to me.
Oh, did he? Oh, great.
He did.
Good.
Wrote a chapter about me called The Hero's Journey or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Well, that's nice that we have that connection, Carl. That's lovely. Dr. Forsyth is a very interesting, brave person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. Now, are there side effects for cancer patients when they use medical cannabis?
There absolutely are. And the world wants easy answers. The world wants CBD from hemp that can be sold on the web. That is not anything that is going to help you. What you need to do is avoid anything sold on the web because it's illegal, basically. And it's being done to support greed rather than to support health. There are intense side effects from any cannabis protocol that will be effective against cancer. And that's why we have 5 people who coach people in the phone. We meet with people individually and spend time showing them how to work with the material and what side effects, et cetera, to notice and how to gradually attenuate yourself so that you don't go through a really tough period of time getting used to the cannabis. We were the first to make these kind of high potency extracts that are now kind of the darling of the world, but we did it for medicinal reasons. So we have a very high THC and a moderate level of CBD that has become famous and that most of the world is now copying. Rick Simpson at the Phoenix Tears Foundation now uses our ratio.
Mm-hmm.
When I first met Rick across a Skype call at UC Berkeley, he actually basically screamed at me that CBD kills people. And I explained to him that, of course, CBD does not kill people, but that we, even being the first providers of CBD, know that THC is the workhorse in cannabis. And so gradually we've seen that our ratios are touted and used, but unfortunately they're often used without the deep scientific knowledge that promulgated them and that we attempt to take forward always in sort of a restlessly innovating way. We think this plant has so much to say to mammals, and we believe that it's God's gift to the earth and to the mammals. And that the discovery of the endocannabinoid system is leading us to understand why this plant is so powerful in our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's very good for pain, correct? And does it actually kill the cancer cells, or is it primarily for pain?
No, actually, this is what was news to us. We did not expect what happened. We had no idea. It was an experiment because Dr. Forsyth asked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, I lost track there. Just one second. Can you repeat that question?
It's very effective for pain, but does it also kill the cancer cells?
Yes. Okay. So I'll talk about pain second. THC kills cancer cells in every method known by which cancer cells are killed. You can look on our website at Constance therapeutic.com, mm-hmm. and you will see Jahan Marcoux's work in Dr. Sean McKenna's lab, and you will see THC actually killing cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called apoptosis. And then you will see the CBD cells doing it too, but doing it much less so.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually kills them. It actually also prevents the growth of the vascular systems, the blood vessels mm-hmm. that are necessary to spread it. And thirdly, it actually interferes with the cell growth cycle of the tumors.
Mm-hmm.
We have now seen more evidence in the last year, Kevin McKernan's work, and also Project CBD has been involved with that. And we have now understood that CBD is more effective than we initially thought, but it is not nearly as effective as THC. And the real important news is to use them both together.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the experience of finding which was most effective, and we can shift those ratios if there's a good reason to do so. But until you know what you're doing it from the same genetics with a standardized patented process, you really can't replicate. So there's not much point to experimentation until you have standardized what you're working with. And let me just briefly comment on the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So I developed this medicine, which turned out sort of miraculously to be having these effects that the doctors are talking about in cancer, but I developed it for my severe pain situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was miraculous for me over time. It gradually gave me my life back. I started out having to take about 0.6 grams of THC, like 500 milligrams of THC and about 200 of CBD to get any effect whatsoever. I had to work up to that gradually. And what I found, first of all, happened is that I could sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my disease, not being able to sleep is at least half the battle. Then I found that my joint pain and the intense bruising and neuropathic pain that I woke up with every morning was becoming suddenly less and less. It was just a gradual process. I now take about half as much as I took then, because the wonderful thing is that you attenuate to cannabis bioactive compounds, but you don't actually have to increase your dose. So it's not like opioids, where you start and then you up and then you up and then you up and then you hit the level where your body can't tolerate them anymore and you're in great toxicity and there's no way to escape the pain, which has actually become worse by the treatment
mm-hmm.
neurologically. So the opposite happens in cannabis. You have to be very careful to get used to it slowly and carefully. You have to search for which is going to work for you or find knowledgeable people like us to work with. And then you find that your use of it can decline and that it is cumulatively more and more helpful. I have a left wrist that has no tendons or bones or joint left in it from my disease. It's liquid. It's incredibly, incredibly painful. And they wanted to fuse it. Basically, I would not have a wrist any longer. And what I found from using the cannabis oil is that the swelling decreased over 2 to 3 years down to a normal level from a gross level.
Mm-hmm.
I have pictures documenting this. And I found that the pain became less and less. It's still there. I want to be very realistic about this. I deal with a very serious level of pain that would keep most people in bed 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
But what it has done for me is give me less inflammation, so therefore better control of pain. It has given me sleep, therefore much better and immediate control of pain. And it has allowed me to distance from the pain psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
And many other people report this. They
mm-hmm.
say, you know what? It isn't that the pain has gone away, but it has given me a less immediate relationship with it.
Great. Now, Constance, would you tell us about services, products, or if you have a book and how the listeners can reach you? If you have a website also.
I'd be delighted to.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We have a really great website. It's up in temporary format right now, but it's very research-oriented, and it links to a lot of hard science and interesting things that are being done in cannabis. And it's ConstanceTherapeutics.com. And I speak regularly. We were the first to ever speak at South by Southwest, California Academy of Sciences, those kind of places. And so where I'm speaking is always up. I also have a personal website that we recently put up, which is ConstanceFinley.com. That's Finley, ConstanceFinley.com. We write blogs and are basically present in kind of the thought leadership in the serious area of medicinal cannabis. And we'd be delighted to put you on our, you know, list to disseminate information. We have products that we sell in California in person only. We meet with anyone in California and we can come to them. And we deal with a protocol that oncologists refer for cancer. We've worked with a lot of Lyme patients. We've worked with a lot of epileptic patients, a lot of MS, Huntington's, Parkinson's, chronic pain. We're beginning to move into the area of opioid addiction withdrawal. It's been an interest of mine for a very long time. We've done a lot of work in that area, and that's now becoming an exciting alternative for people. Mm-hmm. So I hope that we move into that area in a big way soon.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Constance. It's been very interesting, and I know it will be helpful to those that have pain or cancer or some of the other chronic illnesses that you have mentioned. So I thank you very much.
Thank you, Carl. It's delightful to get to talk to you and to the people, you know, who are hungry for this kind of information. We want to make the world a safer place and a better place for mammals. So that's our contribution, is our medicinal cannabis extract.
Great. Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I hope some of the information was useful to you, and I invite you to my two websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all previous shows under the blog for the last 10 years. I also invite you to my Cancer Foundation website, holisticcancerfoundation.com. I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.